This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 325 for the week of October 19th, 2020. I am model disciplined worker David T. Cole, and I'm here with pristine coat of sadness, Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Youth pigeon shooting champion Tara Ariano.
50 years ago, but let's not talk about that.
And grandma's worst nightmare, Will Ellis.
Hi, I'm your fragile grandson's ballerino best friend.
Welcome to Extra Hot Grape for another week. Joining us after some hiccups with the first time we attempted this, it is Will Ellis at long last. Hello, Will.
Will.
Ayo.
Yay!
Yes.
Will, we're so happy to have you here to talk about, just in time for the spoopy season, Someone Have to Die. Just kidding. Someone Has to Die is what it's called. This is the new miniseries on Netflix imported from Spain. Here's what it's about in brief. Gabino has returned to his family home outside Madrid after living in Mexico for 10 years, but he is not alone. He's brought his friend Lazaro, a ballet dancer who becomes an immediate object of fascination or suspicion or both for various members of the household, which, by the way, is full of secrets.
Secrets.
Like, what is this mysterious letter that housekeeper Rosario wants Gabino's mother Mina to get for her? What escape plan is Mina plotting on her own behalf, and why? And what were the actual circumstances that killed Gabino's grandfather, which also coincidentally happened 10 years ago?
Secrets.
All three episodes dropped on Friday. We may discuss elements from all of them, going straight through to the climactic gothic ending. First, though, let us do the Chen check-in, starting with Will. Will, should people watch Someone Has to Die?
I think it's one of those shows where 5 minutes in, you're going to know if it's for you or not.
Yeah, I agree.
I personally was very into it just because this is like the sort of rote thing that I love, done with style.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if it's your thing, totally. If not, feel free to skip. It's not that big of a deal.
I think that's a fair assessment. Sarah, what do you think?
Totally. I really can't improve on that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to skip it, but yeah, I think other people will get something out of it.
I agree with Will. I will just add for the Chen Report portion is the first episode is very slow, but it picks up steam for the second and third part.
Yes.
If you want to do napkin math, this is sort of Darkton Villa with more serious undertones.
Mm-hmm.
If you take Downton Abbey and take out the levity,
yeah,
you get a lot about what this show is about.
For sure. It definitely has like dark soap energy.
Yes.
But mm-hmm. I do think, I agree with Dave. The first episode is very slow. It does pick up. But I at the end of it, I was like, that was good. I'm glad I watched it all. But that could have been a movie. Yeah. I don't know why. Yep. It was a 3-part miniseries.
Yes.
But anyway, we're out of the Chen zone. Now we're in spoiler land. So, Will, when I sent you the list of possible topics for this week, you went with this one due to its meeting your criteria of 1, scripted live action, not in English, and 2, to quote you directly, gay shit. I think
Correct.
This delivered on both fronts, though not really the ways I expected. Did you feel that it did?
So it actually delivered in the way I did expect. I feel like it's very much like the typical movie that could fall under both like the LGBT movies and like period drama thriller thing in mm-hmm. Netflix, where like gay shit gets talked about, but you don't really see any of it. And so it's like, if you're going into this being like, oh, it's going to be sexy gay times, that's not what you're going to get. But right. Thankfully I wasn't expecting that. And yeah, there was one funny thing about the like subtitles that they did. They aren't always great, especially when talking about gay shit. So this is like a nice little meeting of the two, because there was truly one time where the subtitle says, "Do you think your son is actively homosexual?" What it really translates to is, "Do you think your son is a top or a bottom?"
Oh, well, I assume that's what it meant, but I didn't realize that. Okay, got it. Yeah.
Yeah. So like this truly just met everything I was expecting from it and did it with a little more flair than I was expecting. So I had a really good time.
Okay. So Sarah, since you called it out in your intro, do you want to talk a little bit about the costuming? Because wow, so many pretty coats, like truly not since Far
oh
From
Heaven. Oh my
God. Truly.
That one coat, when she, in the first episode, she goes to visit her monster husband and it's just like standing away from her and like the way it fastens in the middle. And it's just, I mean, it's pristine and yet it's weighed down by sadness, sewn with sadness. It really is a beautiful, like the entire production is beautiful to look at. And the casting suggest partly this is just like European casting and European actors like being allowed to look like people and not like they were assembled. The States are getting better at this, but slowly. But they really look like, it just looks like it's a mid-century project that was like made mid-century. Like you don't see any, you know, there's no like wrong cars in the background basically. So it's lovely to look at, but here is my thing with Someone Has to Die. I have no problem with art that is uncomfortable or brutal. Obviously, I think it's important. I think it's worthwhile. I'm not a child. But I also think that I hear a lot of this testimony because I think and write about true crime a lot. And there is a certain point with scripted stuff that's not necessarily based on a true story where it's like, I feel like I can't go any further with, for example, this depiction of marital rape or how shitty the society was to queer people. Like, I think this is testimony that needs to be heard, but I do that in another part of my working life enough that it, and also while there are subtle moments here, thanks in large part to the acting, like the Abuela is fully realized
so good
as what she is from the second she appears, like unsurprisingly, given the title, this is like just inexorable misery from the second it starts. And I just was like, I personally, given my other viewing habits, do not have room for this in my heart and at my table, but I completely get why people are, you know, enjoying it and responding to it. I just, it was just like too heavy.
Yeah. Well, it sounded like you were responding to some of that as well.
Yeah. The acting really pulls it out for me. When Sarah was talking about the Abuela, like my number one note on her is her giant teeth. Like they seem like old fake dentures or something like that. And I feel like it's really a like key element to like the actress being able to produce that like characters, just like the gnashing of those like giant fake looking teeth.
And
I loved it.
Glinting evilly. Oh, yes. Totally.
My God. Yes. And Mina, the mom character played by Cecilia Suarez, was just like, was spectacular to me. Like as an actress, I loved her, and I like started to look through what else she's been in. And I think I'm going to like try and seek out some of the other things she's been in. She just like really sold the whole project for me. If she wasn't in it, I don't think I would have made it to the end.
Yeah. She and this creator did another miniseries for Netflix that I believe is called The Flowers. So that's, you can do that one next if you want to see their last collab. Yeah. The grandmother is played by Carmen Mora, who is a repeat star of Pedro Almodovar movies when she was younger. And when I have her in my notes as like bringing the campy Gorgon energy, which it sounds like we all agree.
Totally. Like,
that's the element that she's providing for this. I didn't scream out loud in the second episode when we see a portrait of her from her like younger hunting days. But I screamed in my notes in all caps because it's so gorgeous. There's like this enormous portrait of her because it's established that she was a youth like hunting champion. And so there's a painting of her like, and we know what she looked like when she was younger because she was in like Almodovar movies in the 80s. But it's like her like with her foot on her trophy. It's incredible. It's like one of my favorite details in it. Oh, my God. But yeah, this definitely, it's like, it's melodramatic, and then it's sort of, it kind of has a parabola, right? Where it's like, it starts out very melodramatic and like a dark soap. And then once it's sort of like the suspicions about what is actually going on between Gabino and Lazaro starts to sort of spread through the community. And it actually becomes like sort of about how everyone's horniness for Lazaro kind of starts cannibalizing like the town, basically. But then it's established at the end of the first episode that Gabino does love Lazaro, but Lazaro is not gay. So then it doesn't matter. The rumors still start spreading, and then it starts getting like really dark. And then what kind of has to save it is like this act of public fucking that sets everything right. And then it's like building to this climax that then it's like another kind of high campy, you know, moment with in the final episode where it's like, you know, it definitely wasn't subtle. Like in the first episode when we see Mina like in the pigeon coop at the shooting club being very sad, watching the pigeons getting their wings clipped. It's like, I don't get it. but still, like, this would not have been on my radar at all if you hadn't picked it, Will. And I was like, not sorry, I watched it. I thought it was good. Dave, what do you do? What are your thoughts?
I would say it's a fine watch, but it definitely should have been a movie. Like, there is definitely 40 minutes you can cut out of this and still have the same product. The grandmother, she's basically the Dowager Countess if the Dowager Countess had an armory, which is kind of like fantastic to think about. You know, if that energy transferred back to Downton Abbey, if like we go back to Downton Abbey, whatever she had clears up. She's not going to die anymore. And she also becomes an avid gun collector. You know? And this is how she's going to solve problems in the family from now on.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
And the cane is actually like a very long, like small cage rifle.
I forget who it was somewhat recently in the last few months. We were talking about sort of the... if you're gay in a TV show or film, you're going to have a bad time and there's not a lot of joyous sort of living your life product. You know, like it's the exception, right? When you see that. And this is definitely part of that pattern.
I think it was Mark talking about Schitt's Creek, actually.
That sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah.
So this is another one to, you know, show that pattern. But, you know, it's the... mid 50s, I guess. Right. Because it was 46 was the letter. So this is 56, 57 or so when he comes back.
Right.
So, you know, we've got an oppressive regime in Spain. Nothing's going anybody's way. And it's going to be very dark. And the end where like it's a very to the point short. Now here's everybody who got shot. Done. We're done with this kind of ending. Like there's very heightened soapy moments that are very well shot, but also could be in a telenovela, right? And it's sort of like this weird mix of super camp, but high production, serious themes, crazy takes on what would happen. It's a real mishmash, you know, and it could have given you whiplash, but it doesn't. Like, I feel like it mixes all that pretty well, except for the fact that it's a little too long.
Yeah.
I feel like this is like the double bill with Call Me By Your Name.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, this it's 30 years later. How far have we come? And then you can tack another one on that for, like, a contemporary movie. You know what I mean? Like, at least then you would feel a little bit better about, you know.
Well, it's fall and summer, too.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And, you know, they're both Mediterranean. They're both kind of, you know.
True.
Mm-hmm. They both got the real estate porn aspect to it.
True. You know? Uh-huh.
One has more fruit-based encounters than the other, but.
Yes.
One final thing is just like there is something ironic to me that so much of the plot revolves around Lazaro when he is so clearly a dancer who was hired for this because he can dance well. Like that is my major complaint about this is like Lazaro just stands there and looks kind of confused most of the time, which you could say is the character, but I really don't think it is.
I don't think so either. Most of the acting is stellar, and then Lazaro is also present.
Yes, exactly.
It's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is Tara.
First, I have a correction to make about my rant about connecting from last week. Superstore is going to lead the night on Thursdays when it comes back, which is October 29th. So that part I retract. I'm sorry. I misread something. But I stand by everything else I said. Connecting is still a bad show. Don't watch it. Speaking of quarantine shows, as promised, Social Distance. This is the Netflix one. Jenji Kohan is the executive producer, but it's created by Hillary Weissman Graham, who was a writer on Orange is the New Black. And before that, Bones. Weird trajectory of career, but yeah. Sure. This is the anthology show that, which is what I thought Love in the Time of Corona was going to be. It's 8 episodes with no apparent link between them. I watched them all. They're all around a half hour or less. The headline of our friend Catherine Van Arendonk's Vulture Review is "Thank God Social Distance is Sad," which, yes, I agree. It's definitely the most sad of the quarantine shows that I've watched and talked about on this podcast. Some of the stories that we cover are, we have a guy played by Mike Coulter from Luke Cage who had just gotten into recovery for his alcoholism before lockdown. And Sarah, just for you, Steven Weber plays his sponsor on FaceTime and Zoom, and he has grown a little quarantine ponytail, so that is also present. FYI. We get Danielle Brooks playing a home aide for a disabled senior in a nursing home while her child, who obviously is not going to school during quarantine, is at home. And she has no one to look after the child, who is like a preteen. She looks like she's maybe 7 or 8. So Danielle Brooks, Imani, who's monitoring on her on nanny cams, which is, you know, not ideal, but like this is what she has to do to make do. We have Dylan and Becky Ann Baker playing married retirees. She is she's a nurse who has gone back to work, you know, to help at the hospital where she used to work during the pandemic for obvious reasons. They obviously are amazing together. I don't think I've ever seen them other than in Smash playing a couple, but we see them like he's asked her to quarantine outside the house. They have an RV, and at one point he's like, they're FaceTiming and she's just sitting in the RV. Eating cheese, like just chewing on it like a popsicle. He's like, now you're eating cheese straight from the block, like whomst among us. Anyway, we have a dad looking after his young kid while his wife, who has COVID, is quarantining in their room. That's the one with Peter Scannavino, Sarah from SVU, looking hot, also with a COVID beard. So more thought has been put into the technological conceit of how to present the action. We have like Summer on Zoom, as on Connecting, but also we have like you're watching people on their Ring cams or on their Nest cams or like through their phone interface. Like there's one with young people, Dave, where like they're on Discord or in a shooter game. Apparently it's Overwatch or in VR chat. Then also with like through cameras that are set up to broadcast a high school graduation. And so as a viewer, I felt I just like briefly appreciated the ingenuity of this before getting back into the story. I didn't feel like it was distracting. I was definitely already to hate this show. It's not terrible. Some of them are slighter than others. Having a variety of different characters mean they can get a variety of truthful moments. But it also feels very inessential. You don't have to watch it. Unlike the season 3 premiere of The Conners.
Hang on. Yes. Before you continue.
Yes.
Before we change subject. About the cheese.
Yeah.
You know, who among us is not just not on a block of cheese at some point in their lives? Uh-huh. But really, if I may, the dividing line between doing that and giving up on life and doing that and still having some tether to being part of society is whether you put it back in the fridge with teeth marks. Or you cut it off before you put it back in the fridge.
For propriety's sake? Sure. Yeah, he has another note in that episode, which is one of the better ones. He's like put a bunch of her stuff in the RV. And she gets on FaceTime and is like, this is all the wrong stuff. She's like, when did I ever wear these pajamas? They're like these horrible, you know, dolphin polar fleece things. Anyway, that is inessential, unlike the series season 3 premiere of The Conners. So I won't get into this too much because I wrote about it for Primetimer. It's not going to go up until after the premiere airs on Wednesday night or Thursday. But The Conners is the only continuing show that I watched that I actually wanted to see address the pandemic. So the family was barely getting by when we left them at the end of season 2. And when you list the characters' jobs, you just like involuntarily groan because each one is more fucked by COVID than the last. Louise, Dan's girlfriend, part-time bartender, when she's not on the road singing with her band, Dan works construction. Darlene and her boyfriend Ben are trying to launch an independent ad-supported magazine. Becky and Jackie own a diner. It's just worse and worse and worse. So the short preview of my primetimer piece is that these other quarantine shows, like most of TV, is about characters who are insulated from economic crisis. And The Conners is about characters who live in economic precarity. And that is a story that I, at least, have not seen told in a scripted show with regard to the pandemic. And Roseanne could actually be radical on labor stories relative to the kind of stuff that would get through on other network shows then. And so I'm hopeful the producers of The Conners are going to bring that energy to this season, too, because these other quarantine shows, apparently, generally speaking, are not going to. And I think that's an important element that's not getting told. So I'll link to Catherine's review in the show notes. And for my plug, I also wrote about the fifth and final season of Baroness Von Sketch Show last week at primetime, with several indicative sketches of like what you can expect to see in that show and what makes it good and different. And also came for Schitt's Creek a little bit. So don't get mad at me if you love that show. That's it.
Will, your turn.
Hey, so like over the past few months, I've really gone back to my early 20s when all I used to watch was reality TV. Something about the time right now made it so that's really the only thing I can cope with.
Sure.
Like generally speaking. So I've gone and watched all of the three seasons of Selling Sunset on Netflix, watched them all in about a week at the recommendation of previous guest, Christina Tucker's podcast co-host, Camille Washington. It's maybe my favorite reality TV show I've ever seen.
Wow.
One of the key points is there's only 8 episodes per season, and they're like 30-minute long episodes.
Okay.
It's like all the pleasure you get from The Real Housewives without all the padding in it.
Oh,
and
nice.
Everyone.
Okay.
It's just like big personalities. There's people who you love to hate on it. There's people who you love to hate, but then also love because she wears like bizarre, amazing fashion. Like it's dramatic. And then you learn really quickly which characters you're interested in and which you aren't. So any scene where it's going to be Heather and Jason, you know you're just going to be pressing 10 second until it's done, because you don't care about them at all.
Yep.
So highly recommend. I know it's been out for 3 seasons now and everyone's already talked about it, but if you haven't gone on board, very consumable. Sort of on the other end of things, I've also watched 6.5 seasons of Australia's Next Top Model.
Go on.
7 of the seasons are on Hulu. It's an absolutely like shambolic show. Like in the 7 seasons, they've gone through 3 co-hosts. I mean, 3 hosts. One of the hosts quit right before the live finale, and so one of the like other judges had to take over.
What?
Another season in the live finale, the host announced the wrong winner. Like it's the messiest show. And like if you watch it, you're going to come away with the assumption that like a smooth 95% of Australians have never heard of the concept of empathy before. And that's like kind of what you want from a modeling show where it's like, oh, beautiful people just like doing their thing, not caring. It's like such juicy nothingness. It's absolutely perfect for having on if you have like laundry to do or you're doing dishes where you don't really have to look most of the time. And then you look at the photos and you're like, Demelza, you still look like a cut-rate, like, Peggy from Mad Men, whatever. Who cares? And so, like, highly recommend both those shows if you just need to, like, check out and have something fun and frothy on in the background.
Okay.
And for my plug,
before you do your plug, I have a question about Selling Sunset.
Yes, please.
Because I know lots of people have recommended it, and including our past guest, Stephanie Green, as well. And I'm interested. I'm definitely curious about it, but I don't like it when a reality show makes it very obvious that it's fake. Like, obviously, I know all reality shows are fake, but I don't like it when they sort of like, when they really lampshade the fakeness of it. Is it extremely obvious to you? Do you feel when you watch it the fakeness of it?
So Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. Got it.
So, yeah, yes.
Of everyone I know who's tried to watch it, everyone has watched it the entire three seasons within, like, 1 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. The one person I know who hasn't gotten into the show didn't get into it because they thought it was, like, too obviously scripted.
Okay.
So if that's, like, something that's going to be a no for you, it might be a show to skip. But
okay, got
30-minute episodes, easy to try out.
Okay.
And it, like, hits the ground running, episode one. So you can start to watch it and immediately know if the series is for you or not.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And then for my plug, all I have right now is my Twitter, at @RadJudyGarland. And if I do anything of any interest ever, it'll be there.
Woo!
Sarah D. Bunting.
That is like a fucking Hall of Fame Twitter handle, by the way. Quite jealous of it. Speaking of Hall of Fame, just ask him a West Wing special. Okay, here's the thing. I watched the original episode first, just to sort of ease in to the self-satisfaction. And the, you know, the theme song comes up and I wrote in my notes, the sweet, you know, the dulcet tones of reasonable centrist pornography, which this is what it is. This episode is, I would say, the West Wing at its best and worst, which with a lot of Sorkin stuff, like it, they're just going to be hand in hand. It's the most self-indulgently shticky. At least there's no fucking Gilbert and Sullivan in this, as far as I could tell. It's the least aware of how ignorant it should not make its characters, especially the women who are running the government, whose affairs they seem to be utterly and patchily ignorant of. But someone in the White House understands the issues in play, believes in good governance and democratic process, and that these actors can render what amounts to policy exposition is just like extremely comforting and like almost snuggly. And you forget that however we felt when this was airing about the current president at that time, it's just like cubed in this regime. It's just, you know, 4 years of grasping ineptitude, and it's nice to be around these people again, even though Sorkin is still Sorkin, and with all that that implies. You also forget how good these actors were. So I wanted to like roll over and keep watching like more West Wings like this, you know, if this had been a canon entry, I would have been like, I don't think this should go in, but I did want to keep watching.
It's Hartsfield Landing is the episode, right?
Yes, correct. Season 3, episode 15, and that is on Netflix. And there was this line, you're the president, you don't have to act like it, that I thought was just really good. I wrote it down. But then, you know, there's this like extremely self-regarding decision to, for charity, but not really, for attention. To recreate it at the Orpheum Theater in Los Angeles with social distancing protocols, using every available cast member who was still available, with the exception of Leo, John Spencer, obviously, and James Hong, who plays the Chinese ambassador, I think is still alive, but he's in his 90s, so he was no longer in it. But like right down to the press people, like whoever was available, even like people walking through the background of shots, like everybody came back, which was neat. And then Snuffy Walden was plucking out the theme song in the middle of the stage next to a ghost light at the beginning. That, I mean, it was neat. And then you have black and white photos of the cast. And then it kind of starts to feel like the credits of Cop Rock, with everybody like looking fondly at each other and clowning around with face masks. And you're like, okay, look, like, I love all of you. And I loved the show the way you love your extremely pretentious cousin who won't shut up about how he's no longer even eating honey with the veganism. But it's like, look, you know, just do the thing. and skip the interstitials, which were, oh my God, they were awful. They're so bad. So here is my advice to you, gentle listener. If you would like to engage with this, first of all, just watch the episode and then imagine what it would be like with Sterling K. Brown. Sterling K. Brown is great. And then just don't bother with it. If you do, watch Bradley Whitford's intro, because he's gotten way less annoying as Josh. And also he gets visibly emotional about John Spencer still, which made me, which is sweet. It made me smile.
Yeah.
And then just skip the rest of them because like that, why does Aaron Sorkin still want to make Marlee Matlin look like a fucking moron? Like giving her dialogue to that effect doesn't mean you didn't fuck her over. I just kind of wonder why women agree to even to deal with his shit at this point. I guess the money was good. Wait, it's for charity. Except it's for attention. So that's my recommendation. Just go on Netflix, watch the episode, skip the Recreation, which is on HBO Max. It's a little over an hour. I don't know. If you miss The West Wing, just watch it. And I won't judge you. I completely get it. I wanted to marinate in it and watch, like, you know, something that didn't contain the jackal. But yeah, I survived that. For my plug, I wrote a piece on Unsolved Mysteries for Primetimer. Volume 2 of the reboot is out. I ranked all the episodes in order of their must-watchness. I was going to do a little bit here about the unsolved mystery of Sorkin not understanding how to write for ladies, but we all went there in our minds. So yeah, that's it. Yeah. We will link that in the show notes.
I got a few things for the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. Coming up soon, there'll be some very familiar names on episodes. We just launched our Marvel-themed episode this week, but next week is going to be our first Halloween-themed episode.
Ooh,
and you'll see Kate Sanchez that was on a few weeks ago from the But Why Though podcast. Our good friend Joe Reed is a contestant on that episode. Yeah. And joining them is Garen Cockrell from Never Not Funny.
Awesome.
Really fun episode.
Nice.
So check out that. And then also the next week, we're going to have the EHG crossover episode. It'll be a bonus episode with Mark Blankenship, Tara, and Sarah competing with some EHG-themed rounds and games. And it was also a lot of fun.
So fun.
Love that.
Just announced on the Marvel episode I was talking about is our Season 2 lineup. Here's what we're doing for Season 2 on the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show. It is called the Battle of the Podcasts. Here is all the people that you can look forward to hearing next season. That'll start on the first Monday of November. We have from Appointment Television, Andrew Cunningham, Catherine Van Aaron Donk, and Margaret Willison.
Margaret H. Willison.
Thank you. From Defector, we got Dan McQuaid, Louis Paez-Pamar, and Dave Roth. Mm-hmm. From the Fug Girl, technically not a podcast, but you know we're going to let that slide
because
they're coming in with our good friend Pam Ribbon.
Yeah.
From Grierson and Leach. Ooh. Guess what? Guess who the
Leach.
Grierson and Leach.
Uh-huh.
And they're joined by their friend and TV critic for the LA Times, Katie Walsh.
Cool.
We've got Pop Culture Happy Hour represented by Aisha Harris, Linda Holmes, and Glenn Weldon.
Fun.
We have a trio of powerhouse TV critics with Alan Sepinwall, Brian Grubb, and Dan Feinberg.
Awesome.
We've got Slash Filmcast, Jeff Cannata, Dave Chen, and Devinder Hardawar, who's recently on the show.
Amazing.
From the Slate of Podcasts, we have Sam Adams, Dan Coyce, and June Thomas.
Cool.
And finally, we've got War Rocket Ajax with Benito Cerino, Chris Sims, and Matt Wilson.
Amazing.
All that starts in November. So if you're not subscribed to the Great American Pop Culture Quiz Show, why not? Shame on you. Go over to usaquizshow.com and subscribe today.
Yes.
Once again, this week, Marvel. Next week, we've got Halloween. Week after that, Season 2 starts with a bonus EHG episode later in that week. Get going, you. All right. Here on EHG, we've got on the next Extra Extra Hot Great, our good friend, Mademoiselle Caroline, is back. And she's got I am not a crackpot about the term peak TV that we'll be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And then right here on the next EHG Prime, we welcome back Emily Yoshida to talk about HBO's The Undoing, which is what? I don't even know what that is. What is that? Is that the one with Nicole Kidman?
Yes, Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant. It's the Paddington and Paddington 2 crossover.
Oh, yay. All right, it is time for the canon. You know we all love when a guest comes in with a real swing for the fence pitch. So here we go. Will, take it away.
So excited.
So with my sincerest apologies to one Mr. David Tickle, my canon presentation today is on season 1, episode 50 of The Tyra Banks Show, entitled Naomi Campbell. And just to set the tone for this discussion, Dave, could you play clip 1, please?
Now on Tyra.
It has to be just me and Naomi alone.
The backstabbing, the name-calling, the catfight on the catwalk.
You called me the B-word. You said, you'll never be me.
Years of runway rivalry.
I felt like you were terrorizing me.
Explode in a dramatic confrontation.
Why, Naomi?
An all-new Tyra starts now.
Now, this episode of television might not have the critical praise of, say, any of the Mad Men, Breaking Bad, nor even the Real Housewives entries currently residing in the EHG canon, but I would argue that it is a pop culture moment that has managed to live on in a significant portion of the collective U.S. cultural consciousness over the past 15 years since the episode originally aired. It's possible we haven't forgotten about this moment because Tyra has not let us forget about it. Even in 2019, Tyra was giving interviews to the Wall Street Journal about her purported feud with Naomi. And in seemingly every interview Tyra gives about her tempestuous relationship with Naomi Campbell, this episode of television is evoked. For me, the key fascination with this episode is the way it provides a devastating insight into the psyche of Tyra Banks. At the time this episode was released, Tyra was arguably at the very peak of her career as a television personality. America's Next Top Model was in its fifth cycle, and the series had done so well for Tyra that she managed to parlay that success into this talk show. However, as this was the peak of her career, that also means it was the beginning point of her decline. Now, I may have a skewed point of view on this since I was only 13 years old when this episode came out, but in my memory, this was the time when the public conversation around Tyra Banks largely shifted from, she's one of the hottest models ever, to, oh my God, can you believe what a disconnected narcissist she is? Along with her continued antics on America's Next Top Model, I believe this episode serves as a sort of fulcrum point in the shift of her public perception. So with that extended preamble out of the way, let's get into this episode. From the first scene in studio, Tyra states her intention for this interview. She wants it to be a moment of healing. However, from the very first seconds of the episode, it's made plainly clear that the editing and production choices are all made with the express intent of setting up Naomi Campbell as the ultimate villain, who, just maybe, through Tyra's dedication to the powers of truth and vulnerability, could be redeemed and made human once again. A prime example of how Tyra tries to undercut and unsettle Naomi is in how she has Naomi enter the set. No audience, no music, nothing. Dave, could you play clip 2, please?
I don't have an in-studio audience here with us today, so I'm going to ask you at home to please help me welcome Naomi Campbell.
Hi. It's so weird because it's so quiet.
I know.
How are you? Oh. Thank you.
Now, it would seem unnecessarily heavy-handed to play these sort of tricks, since Naomi Campbell, especially at the time, was infamous for just heaving cell phones as projectiles at people. But once the interview begins to play out, it's clear that the extreme editing and production choices were made due to a bone-chillingly palpable desperation to make Tyra seem anything less than utterly unhinged. Unfortunately for Tyra, these attempts fall flat. That's because despite her veering between her nuclear-level baby voice and her patent serious voice, despite the opening voiceover that would sound more at home in an action movie trailer than to frame a supposedly raw emotional discussion, and despite Tyra's constant redirecting of the conversation back to her and her feelings no matter what, another one of her trademarks established in Top Model history, one thing remains clear. To quote the wonderful writer Sarah Hagee's write-up of this episode in February of this year, she notes that watching Tyra in this episode when it originally aired taught her that, quote, something could stew in you for years and literally nobody will care, end quote. That is, Tyra cares a whole lot more about Naomi Campbell than Naomi does about Tyra Banks. To illustrate this point, David, could you play clip 3, please?
People I can understand you want to believe it. For me, it's not important to me. Mm-hmm. As I said, I'm in a part of my life, even then, where it's life means more to me than that. This is just the fashion world is a small pinnacle in the hemisphere mm-hmm. of what really is
going on.
But
what happened at that time for me, Naomi, what happened for me at that time is a big part of who I am today. It was one of the lowest points in my life, but mm-hmm. we all learn from the things that happen in our lives that are negative. And I think that's what made me start T-Zone. I think that that rivalry has made me start America's Next Top Model mm-hmm. because I says I will never be what that represented.
Right.
So throughout the interview, Naomi remembers the clothes she wore and the way she was styled better than her interactions with Tyra. Naomi also seems to have a much clearer understanding of the fashion industry than Tyra does, as she repeatedly points out that, as a model, she did not have the power that magazine editors or designers had. One of these instances provides us with a line that is still regularly quoted in certain areas of gay Twitter. Dave, could you play clip 4, please?
There was a situation, it was a Versace fashion show. I was backstage getting my hair and makeup done, and this is about a year and a half into this feud thing that was going on. And then, I think his name was Angelo, or Italian name, can't remember his name.
Angelo,
was that his name? Mm-hmm. Okay, Angelo called me, and he said, Tyra, I need to talk to you. And I said, okay, and he had a really weird look on his face. And I said, what is it? He says, I have to cancel you from the fashion show.
Right.
And I was like...
And you instantly thought that was because of me.
No, I didn't. Okay. And I said, why? I just did my fitting. I did everything. The show's about to start in 20 minutes. And he gave me a look and kind of did like that toward you. And I was like, okay.
Well, do you ever know Gianni Versace?
No.
Okay, so anyone that knows him knows you. I could never do that. But just so you know, you're not alone. Kate Moss was canceled after doing a fitting in a rehearsal. Yes.
No. So I've been canceled as a model a lot. I'm not blaming you.
That was the Gianni Versace way.
Yes. He was notorious for canceling at the last minute. So that's not what I'm saying.
Nothing to do with me.
This is not my opinion. This is something that somebody did
a head nod. Yes.
Did you even know Gianni Versace? I will always love that. And here's the thing. I don't think anyone is really trying to come out and say that Naomi Campbell is a nice person. She admits herself that she probably said some really mean things to Tyra. But after watching this interview, I'm fairly convinced that very little of the meanness was actually Tyra specific. Naomi Campbell just happens to be, I would argue, the best runway model of all time. And a mean person, and Tyra was mostly just another person she was mean to. But Naomi does accurately point out that the media coverage of the two models was literally making up stories about the two of them. And Tyra, despite her many faults in this interview, does repeatedly point to the racism that pitted two black women at the top of their field against each other. But Tyra falls into the trap of looking at interpersonal relations as having equal weight to structural systemic forces of oppression. She literally says that the industries were only half of the reason she switched up her career. For the other half, she lays the blame entirely on Naomi. Once again, I feel as though Sarah Hagee has the correct take on the situation when she writes that Tyra, quote, expected that being the only two black supermodels at the time, Campbell owed her friendship. She expected a solidarity that went beyond what could be controlled by Campbell, blaming her for an industry's problems. End quote. During this interview, it's made evident that Naomi has grown over the years. She mentions she had one year where she suffered the loss of 6 close friends. She talks about going to rehab and how recovery has changed her life. As we saw later on Naomi's tragically short-lived modeling competition show, The Face, that doesn't mean Naomi is now an angel walking among us. But what it does mean is that Naomi has had the experiences and put in enough work to have a perspective on this so-called feud that lets Naomi give room for Tyra to let out her excesses without taking it too personally, a lesson that Tyra herself could do well to learn from. Admittedly, the second half of the episode does not hold the sort of fascinating drama the first half does. After the initial one-on-one interview in an audience-free studio, Tyra invites Naomi back on stage once the audience has settled into the rafters. This time, Naomi gets to walk out to the standard daytime talk show fanfare accorded to a celebrity guest. There are only 2 notable points in the second half of this episode. First, we are given evidence of how smart Naomi is, as she finally gives Tyra the apology she has been waiting for. Naomi almost certainly waited to do this until there is a studio audience present, making the reaction more feasible to be in her favor. David, could you play clip 5, please?
I have something I have to say.
What's that?
I have something I have to say before we start. However I've affected you, or have you felt that I've affected you, I take my responsibility. I just want to say I'm very proud of you for being a powerful black woman sitting here and doing what you're doing. And please continue, okay?
Thank you so much.
And to cap off the episode, Tyra and Naomi have a walk-off. But get this, they're going to go down the catwalk in the other model style. Once again, Tyra shoots herself in the foot by being petty and making her imitation Naomi walk comically flouncy. Naomi, on the other hand, proves why her modeling career started before Tyra's and has lasted years after the end of Tyra's. Naomi kills it, and thus the episode ends, both models laughing and embracing at the back of the catwalk. Now, as I alluded to at the very beginning of this presentation, I have little hope that Dave will vote yes on this episode entering the canon, but you know, he surprised me with votes in the past, maybe he will again. When it comes to Sarah, I'm torn. I can be almost certain that this episode did not meet one of her canon requirements, as I cannot really imagine a person watching it and being like, now I gotta see the next episode.
Correct.
And I don't think Sarah is quite the glutton for punishment that would lead her to watch the other most infamous episode of the Tyra show, the fat suit episode.
Sigh.
However, I would argue that this episode is not only typical of the Tyra Banks show, nor just the Bush era of reality and live TV's penchant for depravity, but also of Tyra Banks' entire post-supermodel public career. Also, I just started watching The Sopranos for the first time, and I am unable to watch an episode of that show without noticing eerie similarities between Tony and Tyra's way of redirecting the complaints of everyone else back to them and their pain. So I thought that might be a little treat that could push Sarah's boat over the edge to a yes. And finally, I know Tara shares... in my delight of trash television. And I think it's entirely possible that Tara will also appreciate how this episode is a time capsule of celebrity interviews. An interview of this kind happening today is nearly impossible to fathom. Only in the aughts could this be a thing that happened. As noted on a previous episode of EHG, and actually right before this presentation is a big swing. But when I was thinking of exemplary episodes of television, this one beat out the rest of the competition for me, so I had to go with my gut. I look forward to hearing everyone's feedback, both positive and negative, and whether or not this episode gets inducted into the canon, I sincerely hope no one listening gets upset by the decision. Because, well, I'll let Naomi say it. David, clip 6, please.
It's not life-threatening, and it's not that deep.
Oh my God, thank you so much. Well, I mean, I feel like we've teed up Dave so much that we should start with his reaction. So Dave, why don't you go first?
All right. So this episode is basically a hour-long version of the elevator scene from Mad Men when Ginsburg says, I feel bad for you, and Don Draper says, I don't think about you at all. Like, this is basically that scene with Tyra and Naomi.
Yep.
So look, it's not good TV. Like, the actual show itself is terrible and it's poorly done. And, you know, how many references to self-sabotage did Will denote? And he's right. Like, if Tyra was in charge of this show and she had competent people making the show, this episode shouldn't exist. Or if it did exist, it should have never been aired. Right. Yeah. So like within the Tyra, machinery, this episode is a poor effort, right? But for the viewer, fantastic, because we get to see this narcissistic implosion, slow motion implosion happen, where it's just this self-sabotaging her show. It's just not like she came on with Naomi Campbell on somebody else's show and they fought it. Like, she had all the power, she controlled everything, and yet still at the end of it you're like, wow, does Tyra exist outside of Tyra? Like, can't she not see? Like she needs some perspective. She needs that out-of-body experience to see what Tyra Banks is actually like. So, like, it is sort of a marvel of narcissism. Like, to the point where you're like, is that real? You know, but then you see like her and everything else. It's like, oh, that's her. Mm-hmm. She's just incapable of not talking about herself, not reframing everything to be about her. Like the most telling moment for me was the comment where Naomi was trying to explain that she was jealous of Tyra because Tyra had her mom with her all the time. It was something that she didn't. And instead of tapping into that sadness and having Naomi elaborate, Tyra just says, well, let me tell you about why mom was with me, blah, 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 instead of empathizing yeah. with Naomi's mom and, you know, and not being able to be there since she was raising her brother and all that stuff that was happening. It was just me. And like at that point, somebody just tapped on her shoulder. Let her say her piece. Right. Yeah. Like this is like a moment. Right? Like literally Tyra could have had that same interview with a cardboard cutout of Naomi Campbell. And it would have been almost the same
yeah.
because it wasn't really an interview. It was like
an airing
of Seinfeld-esque
airing. It was best of us.
It was.
My
it was
question best. Is you suck totally.
Yeah, exactly.
On top of that, Tyra is such a fucking terrible talker. Like she's an awful listener. She doesn't listen, but she's such a terrible talker. Like yeah. she goes into that story and you can see Naomi thinking what we're thinking, which is get to the fucking point. Like, yeah. why wasn't this cut down yeah. to save you?
Well, at the very start of the episode, when she is just doing the, you know, the introduction after the fact, you know, and she's recapping everything that's about to happen. She's so serious about it and so slow in the delivery. And it's so ponderous. It's like she's on stage and she's got to give the Gettysburg Address or something like that, you know, in a really, you know, important moment, she's really got to deliver. And it's just like, I thought you were mean to me, boohoo, the show.
Right.
And it is just a marvel that it made it on the air. And like Will's right, you know, the front half is fantastic. The back half less so because of just, it's more of a typical kind of, you know, talk show and, you know, all the bullshit audience that just claps when they're supposed to and all that kind of stuff. But just the narcissism in play in the first one and how Tyra is so unaware and really probably thought that like that was a slam dunk swish, nothing but net episode. And then it goes off and it's just like in her face is kind of amazing. So show terrible, episode poorly made, bad idea for everybody involved, except, you know, Naomi Campbell came out of it okay. But like, even so, I felt like the whole thing was probably beneath, like, you know what I mean? Like maybe she felt this would mm-hmm. be one less thing that would sort of follow her along everywhere if she did it. And I think that's probably the thought process behind that. But like dollars to donuts, Tyra's still complaining about everything she complained about in the same way now that she did then and was supposedly was cleared up in this episode. Right.
Right.
So,
correct.
As of last year, she was.
Exactly. So
per Will's presentation.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Will, I would like to surprise you with a yes vote. And I will, because it is it's more of a human display than it is like a TV show. Like it is a slow motion car wreck of a moment. And the fact that it just happens to be on her own show is like, mwah, like, how did you do?
Such a cell phone. Oh, my God.
Sarah, why don't you go
thrilled.
Next?
I mean, Tyra's entire career is kind of a cell phone, at least in terms of like being a host. Like, I know that people complained when she left America's Next Top Model and people didn't like Rita Ora and they were like, why does she always say photo? And I'm like, oh my God, this is so much better than fucking Tyra.
So like, much better.
And the way that Tyra, like there was so much in every episode, first of all, making up her own language. Like she doesn't understand how language works because she doesn't listen. Because she's a malignant narcissist. So she's like, we're going to have a teach. I'm like, we already have a word for that. It's called a lesson. I've been raging about this for like 20 years, AMA. And then she'd, you know, come to the house and like, they'd all be shrieking and freaking out. And you see a little of that in this episode when we have to sit through the seven deadly sins of sisterhood.
Oh, God. I'm so glad you brought that up.
That she's like an anti-bullying advocate. But it's like, as I said about the West Wing special, like it's for girls, but really for attention. that like so much about America's Next Top Model was, you know, about Tyra being the host, Tyra being the teacher, Tyra being the aspirational figure that they would never be better than, which I think sometimes in the casting, like she was deliberately, but like just picking girls who had no shot so that she wouldn't have to deal with competition because she's a malignant narcissist. So watching this, like watching the unstoppable force of her malignant narcissism battering itself on the immovable object of Naomi Campbell just not giving a fuck ever was extremely pleasurable. Like, this show is terrible. It is made terribly. It is too long. And the problem is that it's her show. And not only is she dragging the subject back around to herself, but she takes forever to do it because she doesn't understand how telling stories works, because she doesn't understand how language works, because she doesn't listen, because she's a malignant narcissist. So watching her, like, not only lose out on that moment that Dave mentioned of connection with Naomi Campbell by telling this rambling, pointless story with a lot of blind alley details that aren't interesting or textural and don't go anywhere about her mom, it was like the Tyra-ist moment. And what this boils down to is that Naomi Campbell made her feel like she wasn't the center of everyone's attention all the time for a split second, and she's mad about it. And now she's trying to confront Naomi Campbell for bullying her, which some people have real problems, girl. Come on. And actually, you're one of them, because the two of you have an opportunity to get real about the issue of Black women being encouraged to destroy each other in this industry so that the industry would not be blamed for doing it. But no, it's about how Naomi shoved your feet off her lap this one time at band camp. Fuck off. Like, the using the word terrorizing is like offensive to me. Like, It's Naomi Campbell. Google it and grow up. Oh my God. Tyra is so terrible, and this is just absolutely a masterclass with like anatomical diagrams of why. And Naomi Campbell knows exactly, like, she plays it. She just plays it and her perfectly, because Naomi Campbell, this is her brand. Like, they show her in a t-shirt that someone said to her being like, "Naomi hit me and I loved it," or something like that. Like, she knows. She doesn't have to care. She doesn't have to apologize to Tyra directly. So she waits until the audience is there. Like, that. I mean, my president. So, like, just watching that and watching Tyra continuing to carve herself up over the one person who's actually good at being a malignant narcissist. Oh, I mean, it was really a joy. And then that catwalk. Oh, my God. Tyra just got owned again. And Dave is right. Like, you have to wonder what the conversations were among, like, producers that were like, "Well, I tried to explain to her that this is like 28, you know, own goals off the face, but she doesn't understand it because she doesn't understand how language works because she's a bad listener because she's a malignant narcissist." Tara.
Yeah, I'll start with the back half first, because the seven deadly sins of sisterhood. This is just like a promo in the rip that we watched, where it was like, go to our website, and basically it's the fig leaf of it is like, it's an anti-bullying initiative to try to get girls to be aware of, you know, the things that are bad to say about other women. But it's like, it's go on the website and talk some shit about other broads is what it boils down to. So yeah. It's like, how does this help anyone?
The Tyra branded website. Exactly.
Yes. In no way does it help. The walk off at the end almost makes this whole exercise worthwhile as a TV enterprise. I mean, obviously it's worthwhile watching, and, you know, we've already enumerated many of the reasons why. It was interesting that Naomi Campbell's philanthropy in the back half, when we're trying to like rehabilitate her after Tyra thinks that she has read Naomi to filth, is it's endorsed by Fergie. Great. Fergie's judgment is very strong. We all know that now. Fergie, the princess, not Fergie from Black Eyed Peas, the one that was married to Prince Andrew. So, you know, cough. And as Will indicated in his presentation, like, she talks about how she hated, Tyra says she hated competing against Naomi so much that it made her create a modeling competition show. Like, I don't really follow that logic. And they also, as Sarah said, you know, with the t-shirt, Naomi hit me and I loved it. Like, ha ha, these jokes about Naomi's reputation. Like, okay, I mean, we all agree that Naomi has gotten the better of Tyra in this instance, but it's like, yeah, if Naomi Campbell punches me, I am absolutely suing her. Like,
yes.
Sorry? Like, that's not okay to do. But yeah, so let's circle back around to the beginning of the episode, because the, you know, we've already said the obliviousness, the complete
My Name Is Alex intro. Oh my God.
That it takes for Tyra Banks to like even come up with this idea and pitch it to her producers and presumably override all of their sensible objections and, right. and plow through and yes. do it anyway.
Let's nuke that hurricane.
Exactly. Yeah. It's remarkable. And like, that's the story. That's the oral history that I want, is like how
Me
this episode
too.
Happened. But
yes,
the degree to which in her like extremely grave introduction, she tries to set the table, not just for like how nervous she is, but she's like, and Naomi's probably really nervous too. Like, no, she's not.
Doubt
she's
it.
Fine.
You know, not like, at all.
No, she looked to Quaalude. She's fine.
She's perfectly fine. So yeah, they, in addition to glossing over the racism of the industry that you know made it so that there only could be one black top model at a time and pitted them against each other for all of the in all of the ways that, you know, we've already discussed, it takes three segments before they even get to the fact that Naomi yeah. Campbell, in addition to, as Will said, probably just being a mean person like in her core, is also in recovery. So like, maybe some of the reason why she was mean to Tyra, or, you know, on particular occasions, is that she was high or drunk or in withdrawals or couldn't get coke that day or was hungry or, like, you know, and many reasons why she was not being her best self at that time, because there were, you know, extenuating circumstances leading into it, in addition to the ones that she actually talked about, like her mother, you know, getting pregnant again when she was like trying to start out in the industry and not having her there at the time. Like, shit was going on. So yeah, this is, I didn't even know. Oh, one more thing. For this being a sit down between what were presented as like the two most top models at the time, at the top of their industry, what the fuck is Tyra wearing?
What is the bib situation?
Her
Thank
outfit
you.
Is so insane.
Totally forgot about the
she
lunatic
never looks
flaps.
Right.
It's so bad. And you know, like when you see it, you're like, okay, I mean, it's the early aughts, like maybe. And then Naomi comes out looking perfect. And you're like, oh no, Tyra just can't dress herself. I forgot. That's something about her that I had forgot was like part of her character. So like, yeah, yeah, she just in every possible way, from like the deep to the totally superficial, she just does not set herself up for success in this enterprise, yeah. which should have never happened, but thank God it did, because what a document. Oh my God, Will, thank you so much for bringing it to me. I did not even know this had ever happened. And this
either.
Was a journey I was thrilled to take. So
me too.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. I watch this like once a year. So.
Let's put this to the official vote. I will start with a yay vote. Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh my God. Yes.
Tara Ariana.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. That means the Tyra Banks Show, Season 1, Episode 50, Naomi Campbell. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has the winner.
I certainly do. I'm sorry to tell you, David T. Cole, that it's Paramount Plus, but they are the new home of the Grease prequel series, which I think I missed that was even a thing somehow.
Yeah.
It must
uh-huh.
have been in our winner and loser files at some point, but is it going to be a musical property? It was unclear.
I assume so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even Grease 2 tried to be a musical property. Don't make Michelle Pfeiffer sing. It's a good rule. Yeah, I'm interested to see how that turns out. Paramount sometimes like takes swings at prestige that don't connect, but I guess we'll find out.
Loser of the week.
Oh, well, Boston news anchor Alina Pinto thought it would be a good idea to do a cameo in the Netflix original movie Hubie Halloween, but it wasn't because she got fired. Apparently for violating the terms of her contract. Like, she was not supposed to do any outside projects.
Not for just being on an Adam Sandler Netflix movie on principle.
Apparently, if she had been in Roma, it would have been fine. Yeah. No, I don't know. She just was not supposed to do it at all. And the fact that she did it dressed as Harley Quinn, I'm sure, did not help. But yeah, so whoops.
Yeah, well, speaking of things that don't help, do you know what time it is? All right, guys, it's the 11th game time of the season. Holy cow. Scores are Tara with 4, still within 1 of a win for the season. Sarah's got 3, and Value Guests also have 3. Ooh. You know, the pendulum swings back and forth as we do a stupid, duper dumb game time like we did last week. We swing back to some hard trivia, so that's what we're going to do this week. Very to the point, easy premise here. We are playing Bar Sum from John Potsy, who earns himself an extra credit topic. Simple. I'm going to give you the name of a TV bar or a TV restaurant, and you're going to tell me what show it's from.
Okay.
If you need a hint, I will give you one of the possible patrons of that bar or restaurant.
Okay.
We are a little crunched on time, so I have a lot of questions, but I'll stop it when I need to get out of here.
Okay.
So if we can get through the whole thing, so be it. If not, I'll cut it short and we'll go from there. So with that, let's get the steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Thank you, Dave. I am the only one with steel meals.
Oh, okay.
I have 6 steel meals and an extravaganza gone.
All right. Let's throw it to Biggie to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. The order is Sarah, Tara, Will, are we ready to play Bar Sum?
Yes.
Ready.
All right. Here we go. Sarah D. Bunting, your bar or restaurant, name the show, is The Bronze.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Correct. Tara.
For 2 points?
2 points. Correct.
Okay. Yep.
Tara. Quarks.
Deep Space Nine.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine is correct.
Okay.
Will. McLaren's.
Hint.
Barney Stinson would go to McLaren's.
How I Met Your Mother.
That's good for 1 point. Back to Sarah D. Bunting. Tough one here. The Peach Pit.
Where everything's free. Beverly Hills, 90210.
Correct. Tara.
Yes.
The Zocolo. The Zocolo.
Hint.
Londo Malari.
Babylon 5? Are you serious?
Wow.
I think okay. That information just is...
Perhaps.
Diffusion or osmosis was in play.
Yeah. Amazing.
Back to Will. Luke's Diner.
Oh, Gilmore Girls.
Correct.
Nice.
Sarah. Caritas.
Hint.
Winifred Fred Burkle.
Angel.
You are correct. Tatara.
Mm-hmm.
Granny's Diner.
Hint.
Ruby Lucas.
Mm-mm.
Nothing?
No.
Once Upon a Time.
No.
Once Upon a Time.
Ew.
All right, Will. The Boar's yes. Nest.
The Boar's Nest. Sounds like some nerd thing I don't watch. Can I get a hint?
Yes. Roscoe P. Coltrane would sometimes frequent the Boar's Nest.
It's pretty nerdy.
What?
Roscoe P. Coltrane.
He's too young.
Dude, I'm
honestly... so sorry. I do not know.
No, don't
this
be sorry.
That is...
Sarah knows.
Yes, yeah, Sarah. What
yeah,
is
Yeah, she does. The Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard. All right, Sarah. Mooney's Nightclub.
Mooney's with an N?
Yeah, Mooney's, like the moon, E-Y.
Okay. Mooney's Nightclub. Do we get a free guess?
No.
No. Okay, hint.
Butch Gilzean.
Yeah, no.
Looking there for Gotham. Mooney.
Oh, Gotham. Oh, right. Fish Mooney.
Oh. No.
Tara.
Yep.
The Old Haunt.
Supernatural.
Castle.
Castle. Okay.
Will. Arnold's Diner.
Oh. Now, can I get a hint?
Yes. At Arnold's Diner, you may find Ralph Malph.
Oh, I know I've heard that name before.
In history class.
Yeah.
I don't know. Happy Days.
Nice!
Correct. Happy Days was correct.
Saying yes. Happy Days out of your soft, supple, youthful skin.
We're not all happy days.
I am all right. Thrilled.
Sarah D. Bunting, Moe's Tavern.
The Simpsons.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
The Talon.
The Talon. Oh, fuck. I know that one. Shit. Hint.
Lana Lang.
Oh, right. Smallville.
Correct. Bring us into our first score break for Will. Fangtasia. Fangtasia.
That sounds like, oh my god, it was a Showtime show with the actress with the gap tooth, True Blood.
Nice!
It's HBO, but you got there.
You did.
Yeah. You know.
All right, so let's hear, after 15 questions, the scores, please, Tara.
It's pretty close. Sarah is in the lead with 7 points. Will has 6 points. I have 4 points.
All right, this is going pretty fast, wow. So I think we can do it. So, Tara, you are in the Gross Worth Equalizer Challenge.
All right.
In last place. Here we go.
Come on, Tara!
Newer or old, Tara? What's your pleasure?
Let's do new.
Newer or older would be
newer.
Not exactly new.
Newer.
All right, newer.
Yep.
What entertainment news show picked presidential cousin Billy Bush to replace longtime co-host Pat O'Brien?
Access Hollywood.
Correct.
Nice.
Our old ledge mate, Billy Bush. Right. Oh, What TV variety show is responsible for popularizing the expression pickin' and grinnin'?
Hee-haw.
Whoops, that's correct. Press both buttons at once.
Okay.
What cartoon anti-hero spent an entire episode searching for his, in quotes, son, Stinky the Trouser Cough? What cartoon anti-hero spent an entire episode searching for his son, Stinky the Trouser Cough?
Eric Cartman?
Stimpy.
Damn it! He's not an anti-hero.
Well, that's the way the card is. I can't argue with the card.
Okay.
What series diehard fans made pilgrimages to North Bend, Washington to ogle the Great Northern Hotel, Mill, and Runnett's?
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks is correct. There's your points.
You did it!
4 points.
Four points?
Well done. Wow. All right. Let's get back to the game with Sarah D. Bunting. We're talking Joe's Bar.
Joe's Bar. Hint.
Saul Tigh. T-I-G-H, in case you're wondering.
Saul Tigh. Joe's Bar. I don't know. I don't know.
That is Battlestar Galactica. Joe's Bar.
Yeah.
This is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
For Tar.
Spread Eagle.
Yep.
The Stowaway.
All of these sound so familiar and... hint.
Jack Porter.
Oh, God. Revenge.
Revenge is correct. To Will. Williamsburg Diner.
Ew. I'm just going to take a swing. Two Broke Girls.
Nice swing.
Well done.
Wow.
You do it. All right. This is question... It is for Sarah D. Bunting. The bar or restaurant in question is 10 Forward.
10 Forward is on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yes.
Nice.
Correct. Tara.
Yep.
Java the Hutt.
Veronica Mars.
Correct.
Yeah, buddy.
Back to Will. The Drunken Clam.
Family Guy.
Whoops. Sorry. Wrong button. You are correct.
Okay.
Here's another ding for you.
Okay.
I was like, my dad loves that show.
Sarah D. Bunting. Black Spur Bar.
Black Spur?
Yeah.
Hint.
Crawley.
Downton Abbey?
Supernatural,
I guess.
Oh, right, that Crowley. Yeah.
Tara.
Yeah.
The Dirty Robber.
Mm-mm. Hint.
Mora Isles.
Rosalian Isles.
Rosalian Isles. Yeah. Thanks, Hank. To Will. Verdant. Verdant. How do you say it? Verdant or Verdant?
Verdant.
Verdant. Either. So the answer was neither. It's Verdant, right in between. All right. Green. Verdant is your bar or restaurant, Will.
Green. I feel like there's... Is it Arrow?
Yes.
Wow,
way to think
nice.
That through.
Yes.
It was Green. It was Oliver. Oliver Green? Is that his name?
Oliver Queen.
Queen, but he's Queen. The Green
he's
Arrow.
The Green
but
Arrow.
He's Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting, Orlando's.
Orlando's Hideaway. I'm going to be mad, but hint.
WeeBay.
Oh, ah, The Wire.
Tara.
Yeah.
McRory's. And it's not McGilmore.
Okay.
McRory's.
Yeah. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Takes a stab at it. That's Patty's.
Shit.
Right?
Yes.
Nathan Ford was the hint from Leverage.
Leverage? Never would have gotten
from
that
a
any-
man animal.
I'm so lucky I have not gotten any of Tara's. I would be floundering.
All right, see if your luck continues, Will, with Josie's Bar.
Oh. Oh. Can I get a hint?
Foggy Nelson.
Ew. Foggy Nelson Foggy at Nelson. Josie's Bar.
Correct.
Let's say Northern Exposure. That's wrong.
Anybody?
Daredevil.
Daredevil,
right?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. Sarah D. Bunting, Rosie's Bar.
This is like half of TV. Hint.
Trapper John.
MASH.
Correct.
Nice.
Or Trapper John MD, I guess.
I was going to say.
Tara.
Yep.
Reggie's Diner.
Seinfeld?
Becker.
Oh.
Becker. All right. This Becker. Is going to take us into our next score break for Will.
Yep.
Cafe Nervosa.
Oh. Oh, oh, oh. I think I know. Do I want to take a swing? Do I want a hint? I think it's from Daria.
Damn. All right, let me do the hint, see if you would have got it. Roz Doyle.
Roz. I know the name. It's not going to come to me right away, though.
It's Frazier. I ought to know. I'm Frazier. Scores,
yes.
Please, Tara.
Oh, God, it's so close. Will and I are tied with 12 points each. Sarah has 11.
All right, Sarah, that is good for you. Older or newer?
Oh, God. Newer didn't go so well for me last time, but I'm going to try newer again.
All right. Here we go. What South Park character was so moved by the Passion of the Christ that he started praying to his Mel Gibson poster?
Eric Cartman?
Nice!
Who provided the cartoon voice of Johnny Quest before landing the role of Otter in Animal House?
She just watched this movie.
Is played Otter. By. Is played by that guy who also is on The Sopranos. Fuck. And his name is. He's also on that Law and Order where the lady kills him. I don't know this one.
Anybody?
It's Tim Matheson, right?
Tim Matheson is correct answer.
Oh.
Still got lots of questions to get your three. What MTV game show helped launch Dennis Leary, Colin Quinn, and Adam Sandler's TV careers?
I love the show Remote Control.
Woo!
All right, need one more. You got three, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What soap enticed viewers with a 1990s storyline where Vivian Alamein, I hope, impregnated herself with an embryo she stole from Kate Roberts?
Passions?
Days of Our Lives.
That's what I would have guessed.
Oh.
Yeah. If it sounds too weird, it's got to be Passions, but it wasn't. What show did HBO hype with ads reading, "Every good day above ground is a good one"?
6 feet under.
There you go. Yeah. There's your points. You're one behind, now three ahead.
Yeah.
All right. 18 questions left. Let's get to it. Back to Sarah D. Bunting with a tough one. Doc Magoo's. Doc Magoo's.
Oh, God. Jesus. I was like, fuck, I'm supposed to know that. That's ER.
You're correct.
Yeah, it is.
Tara.
Yep.
Crash.
Roswell?
Good guess. That was a good guess. Dark Angel.
Oh, I know. I just remembered what the Roswell one is, but I'm not going to say it in case it's in the game.
Good strategy. Back to Will. Lou's Coffee Shop.
Lou's Coffee Shop. No, that character didn't own a coffee shop. Okay, can I get the hint, please?
Molly Salverson.
Ugh. Molly Salverson.
Yeah.
Sounds like she solved some things. So let's say, I think this was already an answer. Revenge.
It was. Anybody?
Fargo.
Fargo, yeah, the detective officer or whatever from Fargo. Who does solve things, correct. Sarah D. Bunting. Central Perk.
Friends.
Tara.
Yep.
The Pie Hole.
Is that Pushing Daisies?
It is.
Okay. Yep. Nice.
Will, P3, as people say, or written out P3 in the show, but people always refer to it as P3.
Hint.
Phoebe Hollowell.
Oh, that's another name I know. Wait, is that, it's the show with the three sister witches and then the one dies and a new one comes in, Charmed.
Yeah.
Yay. Okay.
You triangulated it, and that is using
I can see
the power of three.
Oh, Noonan's. No. Noonan's for Sarah. N-O-O-N-A-N. Noonan's.
Noonan's. I need a hint.
Alex Danvers might be at Noonan's.
Of the Itticles, Pennsylvania Danverses. Alex Danvers? I don't know. L.A. Law?
Supergirl.
Supergirl. Oh.
Tara.
You know,
yep.
Same universe.
Taggarties.
Hint.
Dr. Claire Allen.
Nope.
Cupid. Mm. Will. Gem Saloon.
Hint.
Seth Bullock. Though not often.
Oh.
But sometimes.
Old timey show with people who curse a lot. It's...
Captain Kangaroo.
Deadwood.
Deadwood.
Yes.
Sarah. Anthony Anthony's.
Hint.
Natalie Hurley. I know
Facts
you've seen the show.
Life?
No. It's your, favorite show, West Wing's sister show, Sports Night.
Oh, all right, God, right. Yeah. I forgot her last name.
The Brick.
Oh, no. I know this one, too. Oh. Shit. The Brick. Shit, The Brick. Hint.
Pauling Vancouver.
Yep. Northern Exposure.
Correct. Back to Will. Emerald City Bar.
Oh, I almost just made such a stupid guess. Can I get a hint?
Alex Karev. Karev?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, Grey's Anatomy.
Yes, good for one.
I almost guessed Oz.
I mean...
Yeah, sure. I get it. Yeah, yeah, you know, the prison bar.
Uh-huh. Sure.
King Kamehameha Club.
Hawaii 5-0.
Oh, yeah, good guess. The other one. Magnum P.I.
Oh.
Tara.
Yep.
Same As It Never Was.
Hint.
Andrea Marino.
No. No idea.
Anybody?
Chicago Fire.
No. Ghost Whisperer.
No.
Oh.
All right, Will.
Never in 1 million years. No.
The Lanford Lunchbox.
The Lanford Lunchbox. Hint.
Leon Karp.
Yeah.
Let me give you another hint. Kind of mentioned in this show already.
Kind of mentioned in this show already.
Yeah.
wasn't mentioned in the show, but I'm just going to say Bob's Burgers because that's all that's in my head.
Incorrect. All right.
Roseanne,
correct. Talking about the Connors. All right, everybody's last question. So let's quickly get the scores, please. Start.
All right. Will and I are tied with 15 each. Sarah D. Bunting is comfortably in the lead with 19.
All right.
No, 19.
All right. Let's play it out. Sarah D. Bunting, we're talking about the Ice House.
My mind has emptied. Hint.
All right. This may be frequented by a character named Joey Potter.
Oh, God. That pit does its creak.
Correct. Tara, your last question.
Yes, sir.
Riff's Restaurant. Riff's. R-I-F-F.
That's Seinfeld. Nope.
No. That's Mad About You.
Fuck!
It's Tom's, right?
Tom's.
Yeah, Tom's Restaurant.
Well, that's... Okay. That's what the real one is called, but I don't know.
Oh. Monks.
Monks.
Yeah.
God damn it. There is a Reggie's in the Seinfeld universe, but it's like the bizarro.
Last question for Will. Okay. Monks. No. Last question for Will. Bada bing.
The Sopranos?
The Sopranos is correct. For 2 points. Regulation. Scores, please check.
I finished with 15. Will finished with 17. Sarah D. Bunting is our victoress with 20 points.
Nicely done, Sarah D. Bunting.
Thank you.
Before we congratulate you officially, let's play this tiebreaker that will one steel meal in play. Whoever answers it first, please shout it out. Everybody's in on this. Here we go. The restaurant or bar in question is the Double R Diner.
Twin Peaks.
Twin Peaks for Tara is correct. She now has 14,000 steel meals. But today is...
Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Well done. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took a shot at the Netflix import Someone Has to Die before going around the dial with stops at Social Distance, The Connors, Selling Sunset, Australia's Next Top Model, and West Wing. Will was America's Next Top Canon submitter with his argument for Tyra's Naomi Campbell confrontation episode. We found winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time from Potsy. Next up, it's peak TV semantics on Extra Extra Hot Great, and on the next EHG Prime, The Undoing. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
going to Monk's to get a big salad,
Sarah D. Bunting.
Today is a healing day for me.
And Will Ellis.
Did you even know Gianni Versace?
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra on Great.